Hi, this is Pastor Joseph San Jose of Open Table Metropolitan Community Church. At ito pong recording na ito ay nakabase dun sa first topic natin for our Pride Month series, Homosexuality is Not a Sin. And the first topic is Bible in Context, no? Konteksto ng Bible. Ngayon, hindi po kasi namin na-record yung actual na workshop or actual na seminar last Sunday because of technical problems. So we did a separate recording of that topic. Also, sa makikita at maririnig nyo sa recording na ito, medyo iba yung latag, no? Reflecting of what happened last Sunday, medyo iniba ko yung flow ng topic flow for it to be much clearer in this recording. I'm also aware that we have two people, one from the US and another one from Latin America, who were requesting for a recording of the sessions. And we are very happy about that. We appreciate that a lot. However, we would apologize that we cannot have the recording in purely English. It will be mostly in Filipino, in Tagalog, with some parts of it in English, because our primary concern and primary audience is our congregation, our Filipino congregation, our Filipino sisters and brothers in our country. So I hope you understand that we could not have this in purely English. So ito ang unang topic natin for Pride Month, no? Bible in Context. I know many of you, yung naramdaman ko din nung last Sunday, is that people wanted to understand and to know immediately yung mga verses that is supposedly anti-LGBT or at least used as an anti-LGBT biblical verses against LGBT. Pero napaka-importante na malaman muna natin bago tayo pumunta dun sa six clobber passages. Bago tayo pumunta doon at isa-isahin, importanteng malaman muna natin yung foundations, no? Ano ba ang basihan, ano ba ang method na aming ginagamit upang tignan ang supposedly anti-LGBT verses at gayon din ang what we can consider to be pro-LGBT biblical texts. I wouldn't even call them as pro-LGBT, I would call them as pro-people, makataong mga biblical verses in the Bible. So, let's also set our objectives for this topic. Number one, we must learn kung ano ang Bible. Ano ba talaga ang Bible? At saan nanggagaling ang kanyang sacred status? Dahil ang pananaw, kung paano natin tinitignan ang Biblia, ang pananaw natin sa Biblia, ay nagsishape kung paano natin siya binabasa at kung paano natin kinukuha ang iba't ibang mensahe mula sa kanya. So, number one, we need to know, what is the Bible really? Ano ba talaga ang Biblia? At paano ba ito naisulat? Saan ba galing ang sacred status or authority nito? Number two, dapat din natin maintindihan ang importansya ng konteksto, historical context. Historical context ng Bible. At isa sa mga titignan natin among so many contexts of the Bible, isa sa mga focus natin sa recording na to is the sexual context of ancient times, of the ancient Near East. How did the people of the ancient Near East understood and practiced sexuality and sex? Paano ba nila ito naunawaan? Ano ba ang konsepto nila ng sex at sexualidad? Pareho ba ito sa ating pananaw ngayon? O kakaiba? Or a mixture? What have you? So, isa sa mga matututunan natin ay ang importansya ng konteksto, and then titignan natin ang sexual context of the ancient Near East. At panghuli, Panghuli, ang titignan din natin ay ang method of literary and textual criticism. Ito ang pangalawang basic method of reading and interpreting the Bible. Yung una nga is the historical context. The second one is literary and textual method of reading the Bible. So, importante, malaman natin, makuha natin ang tatlong objective na ito so that makita natin yung basis at ma-appreciate na natin ang magiging discussion on the succeeding topics of our Pride Month series. So, punta tayo ngayon sa kwento. Punta muna tayo sa kwento. According to an Asian theologian, a famous Asian theologian, C.S. Saul, in the beginning were stories. In the beginning, according to him, in the beginning were stories. Wala pang Bible, wala pang theology, wala pang Kristiyano, wala pang Hudyo. Nagsimula ang lahat sa kwento. And majority of the Bible is stories. Karamihan ng nilalaman ng Biblia ay mga kwento at iba't ibang types of stories. Of course, there are other things that are in the Bible like poetry or poetic songs. You have law and regulation. You have prose and you have epic stories, parables. And we know even the written Bible, the majority of the content of the scriptures are stories and different types of stories. Although, syempre, meron ding iba pang mga bagay na nasa Bible tulad ng poetic songs, tulad ng psalms. Meron kang laws and regulations tulad ng Leviticus and Deuteronomy. Meron kang letters, so letters of Paul. And you have epic stories, you have myth, et cetera, no? But majority of the Bible, the large part of the Bible are stories, mga kwento. At iba't ibang types ng kwento. So, ancient peoples told stories. It is their way of trying to explain and to explain who they are as a people, and it's their way of expressing how they understand their origins, how they understand the world. So nagkwento sila ng paano nila naunawaan, paano nila pinapaliwanag ang kanilang sarili, saan sila nagmula, at ang mundo na kanilang nakikita, naririnig, na ginagalawan. And according to Marcus Borg, a New Testament scholar, a Greek Testament scholar, the stories in the Bible have two kinds. May dalawang uri ng stories ang Bible and the ancient peoples. Number one, he coined the term metaphorized history, in which there is a historical memory. So merong naganap na isang bagay or isang event may naganap na importante dun sa mga taong iyon. And then over time, ikinuwento nila itong pangyayaring ito in a metaphorical way. So kaya tinatawag niyang metaphorized narrative or metaphorized history. The other one is a purely metaphorical narrative. A purely metaphorical narrative. Meaning, isa tong kwento na wala namang pinanggalingang historical event or historical memory. It is a pure story, metaphorical story, or symbolic story that tried to explain things, that tried to understand how the world works, how they see things. So these are the two stories according to Marcus Borg. Although habang binabasa ko si Marcus Borg, na-realize ko naman that ako sa pananaw ko, I prefer to call or use the term theologized history. So, pareho nung kanyang konsepto, may nangyaring event many years ago, hundreds of years ago, ikinuwento siya ng paulit-ulit in a theological way. So nababalot na ng elemento ng spiritualidad, ng teolohiya, ng paniniwala yung historical memory nila. At the other one, I would call as historized theology. Historized theology. Meaning, isang pananampalataya, isang kwentong pananampalataya na ikinuwento na merong history, na parang binigyan siya ng isang historical flavor or historical framing. No? Para magmukha siyang parang kwentong nangyari talaga. Pero tulad ng isang purely metaphorical story, purely pananampalatayang kwento siya. Wala, it doesn't necessarily have a historical basis. So, yun ang dalawang klase ng kwento. You can use Marcus Borg or you can use what I coined, the two terms or definitions of stories that I coined. So, historical context. So, itong mga kwentong ito, whether it's a historized, metaphorized history or a purely metaphorical story, ang mga kwentong ito ay oral tradition, nagsimula as oral tradition. Sabi ko nga kanina, pasa-pasang kwento over hundreds of years or sa part naman ng New Testament over several decades. Nagpasa-pasa. And then at some point, siya ay sinulat. No? Isinulat. At usually, ipinapasulat siya, well, in the case of the Old Testament stories, isinulat siya at ipinasulat siya ng elite class, no? Ng monarchy or ng temple priesthood. Dahil ancient peoples, 99.9% of them ay hindi marunong magsulat, hindi marunong magbasa. Only the elite class knows how to read and write. And actually, even some of the elite class don't bother about reading and writing. Few of them. But the elite class are the ones who have these stories written down. So for example, in the Old Testament or the Hebrew Testament, sinimulang ipasulat ang mga kwento ng Israel nung panahon na ni King David when the kingdom of Israel was established and was already peaceful. So nagsimulang magsulat nung panahon na yon at sinulat sa lingwahe nila at that time in ancient Hebrew. So kung paano yung oral tradition has been formed and informed by the context of its time and over the centuries or over the decades na siya ay nagpasa-pasa, by the time na isinulat siya ng scribes, ng writers, ng priests, by the time na isinulat siya, in the same manner that the writers, the scribes, were also writing within their own context. Writing within their context, the context of their time, and the intentions and context of those who told them to write the biblical stories. Kaya naman, sa pagbabasa ng Biblia, ito nga yung ating pinupunto, or any other ancient manuscript, any other ancient text, napaka-importanting alam natin ang historical na konteksto nung Biblia as a whole, and nung iba't ibang parts or iba't ibang books of the Bible. And the context includes political, economic, cultural, and even geographical context. Importanteng may awareness tayo doon, importanteng alam natin yun. Because again, those are the things, those are the realities that shaped the consciousness of the people who told the stories, the consciousness of the writers who wrote those stories. Kaya nga sabi ni John Dominic Crossan, isang another New Testament scholar, a Jesus historical scholar, at dati siyang isang Roman Catholic monk turned archaeologist turned biblical scholar. Sabi niya, if you do bad history, you will do bad theology. So, importante ang historical context. Now, para mas maintindihan natin ito, para itong kung saan natin siya ihahambing sa panahon natin ngayon. For example, sa mga Lord of the Rings enthusiasts, natuwa ka dun sa Lord of the Rings movie, binasa mo yung tatlong libro. Hindi ka nakontento dun sa tatlong libro, binasa mo yung The Hobbit na libro, which is actually just one book. Hindi ka nakontento, gusto mong malaman what was the history of Middle Earth before the events of Lord of the Rings. So, hinanap mo ang librong Silmarillion or the other books of Tolkien. So, inalam mo, no, para maunawaan mo bakit ganito yung mga nangyari sa events ng Middle Earth and Lord of the Rings. Ngayon, hindi ka pa rin nakontento kasi nakita mo, bakit ba sinulat ng author in this way? Bakit may parang may nakikita akong Christian elements? Bakit parang si Tolkien, nung sinulat niya yung about sa mga trees na nag-aclass against Saruman, bakit ganun na lang yun? Hinanap mo yung biography niya. Sino ba si Tolkien? Saan ba siya lumaki? Sa ano ba ang educational background niya? Nalaman mo na isa din pala siyang linguist. So doon mo rin nalaman na kaya pala naka-invento siya ng mga languages, sophisticated languages for Lord of the Rings. Nalaman mo na, well, ito hindi ako sure. Ang pagkatanda ko, Roman Catholic ata siya, but I'm not sure of that. But definitely, he was Christian. So whether he's Anglican or Roman Catholic, makikita mo bakit may lumilitaw na Christian elements and symbols sa kwento ng Lord of the Rings. Although sabi niya, hindi naman daw niya intention yon. Pero doon mo makikita, doon natin nasasabi why the context and the consciousness of the writer seeps into the writings, no? So yeah, no, Lord of the Rings. Another example is Game of Thrones. Sa mga Game of Thrones enthusiast diyan, hindi niyo lang binasa yung libro, hindi niyo lang sinubaybayan yung 8 years na series. Gusto nyong malaman what was the history of Westeros or the Targaryens before nangyari ang Game of Thrones events. And then, one of the glaring things about Game of Thrones, napaka-violente naman itong series na ito. Ang daming patayan na very, very, very gory, no? So, inalam mo, ano bang basihan ng author? Saan ba binasi ng author yung kanya? Or nung playwright, screenwriters ng series, saan ba nila binase ito? Nalaman natin na this is actually based on actual historical sources of the kingdoms of Europe. Na ganun pala ka-violent ang mga away-awayan ng mga kingdoms in Europe in the Middle Ages. So, when you search for the context, when you know the history, the politics, the culture of the stories, mas ma-appreciate mo siya, mas maiintindihan mo, mas mauunawaan mo. And then you can draw more meanings out of the stories. So, it's the same with the Bible and the biblical stories and other things that are written in the Bible. We need to know its historical context. So kung pupunta naman tayo sa Bible, just to give a few examples. So hindi po si Moses ang nagsulat ng Bible. Hindi po. One clue, sinabi ko to nung Sunday, one clue. So si Moses, mamamatay na siya sa Mount Moriah yata, something. So, mamamatay na siya sa mountain dahil hindi na siya pinayagan ng Diyos, ni Yahweh, na pumasok sa Promised Land. So, kung si Moses ang nagsulat nung first five books of the Bible, sino nagsulat nung few chapters after nung namatay siya? Ano yung multo? Multo niya ang nagsulat. So, Moses did not, according to biblical scholars of the last 200 years, it was not Moses who wrote the first five books of the Bible. So, some parts of Genesis, according to, you can look this up, hindi ko na i-explain to extensively, we have what we call the four-source theory by a German by a German scholar. I forgot the name, but you can search four source theory of the Torah. So according sa kanya, may apat na scribal traditions na nagsulat ng first five books of the Bible, including Judges and Joshua. So yung a few parts of Genesis and a few parts of Exodus were written by the Yahwist tradition in year 900 BCE, before Common Era, during the kingdom of David and Solomon. Sabi ko nga kanina, di ba, sinimulang ipasulat ni Haring David at Solomon ang kwento ng Israel nung established na ang kingdom nila. And this was the Yahwist tradition. And they wrote some parts of Genesis and some parts of Exodus. And then, another scribe, set of scribes, nung nag-separate na ang kingdom of Israel from ng southern kingdom of Judah and northern kingdom of Israel, some parts of Exodus and Genesis were written in the northern kingdom. And then, at some point, nag-Voltes 5 yung dalawa. So, at some point naman, the book of Deuteronomy was written and discovered during the Jewish Reformation of King Josiah. At kasama nga yata doon ay ang book of Judges and book of Joshua. Kaya ang tawag din ng mga scholars sa Deuteronomy is the second law. That was written and found or discovered during that time, during those events. And then the Leviticus, the book of Leviticus, it might come as a surprise to many. Again, it was not written by Moses. It was not written by Aaron, the brother of Moses. It was written by priests, by the Levitical priests during the Babylonian exile. Many, many hundreds of years after Moses. So, sinulat ang Leviticus and Book of Numbers during the time of exile, nung na-exile ang people of Judah sa Babylon. So, the events that happened during the time that these certain books were written certainly has those contexts written into those texts. Another example is the book of Isaiah. Ang book of Isaiah po ay hindi entirely sinulat ng prophet Isaiah. There are chapters, the first few chapters were written by, most possibly by the prophet Isaiah. The second part, some parts of it were written by the disciples of Isaiah. And then the last part were written by another second generation disciples of Isaiah. And then these three parts of Isaiah were written in different times. The prophet Isaiah wrote from before sila ma-exile towards sa pagka-exile nila. And then the disciples of Isaiah wrote during the time na exile sila, nasa Babylon sila. And the second generation of disciples of Isaiah wrote in their during the transition from living exile going back to after exile going back to their land in Judah. So, pag alam mo yon, maiintindihan mo bakit ganun isinulat ang certain chapters o the certain different chapters of the book of Isaiah. So, uulitin kong napaka-importante ng konteksto sa pagbabasa at pag-aanalisa at pag-iinterpret ng Bible. And one of their contexts is that the entire Bible, ito naman yung overarching context. The entire Bible have been written, each of the books have been written always during a time of empire. A time where, when we say empire, this is a system of society and politics na napaka-oppressive. And it's not just empire, it's a feudal empire, no? Imperyong feudal. And patriarchal, no? Patriarchal historical context. So I hope nakakasunod pa, no? Nakakasunod pa tayo yung flow. So ngayon, pupunta tayo sa isang specific kind of context, a specific kind of historical cultural context in the ancient times. We will go to the sexual context. How did ancient peoples in the ancient Near East understood sex and sexuality? You always hear among some people the word patriarchal, or maybe this is the first time that you will hear it. Patriarchal means that it is male-centered and male-dominated. Ancient peoples are heavily patriarchal. The world of the Bible is patriarchal. I mean, even now, we still have napakalakas pa rin ng patriarchy sa panahon natin ngayon. And it's coming out in different ways and different forms today. So one of patriarchy, included in patriarchy is sex and sexuality during ancient times. Ang merong lang sexual agency, ang merong lang sexual rights is the man. A fully grown, privileged man. It's not just any man. It is a fully grown, privileged, free man. Hindi slave. Walang sexual agency ang isang male slave. So sexuality is only understood primarily here that it is the man who has sexual freedom. A privileged man. Pwede rin natin itong makita in the sense that it's sexuality back then was understood about penetrator and penetratee. Okay? I won't elaborate on that. You can check it in other sources. But it's penetrator and penetratee. Now, and sa penetrator, that the penetrator is the man, the privileged man. The man who is free, who has sexual freedom. So anything and anyone else is considered as a sexual object to that man. Women are not does not have sexual freedom. They are sexual objects to the man. Male slaves are also sexual objects of their masters, particularly their male masters. Boys, young boys, who are not yet fully grown men, can be a sexual object to men, to fully grown men, to privileged men. yeah, slaves, etc. No? So ganyan ang sexual practices, sexual understanding noon. Okay, so in ancient times, alam din at common practice ang what we call as pederasty. Pederasty is simply that a young boy ages 16 years old to about 21, 22 years old can have an older male lover or an older male mentor or benefactor. Usong-uso yan noon. Hindi lang sa Greece, even in the Mediterranean area, even in Egypt, even in Canaan, uso yan. And wala silang issue dyan noon. You can watch the HBO series Rome. Merong snippets of pederasty doon. So because again, for the people of that time, a young boy is not yet a man. Therefore, a young boy can still be at hanggat nananatiling feminine ang features ng lalaki, pwede siyang sexual object of someone who is considered as a man, as a privileged man. The other thing about ancient peoples, about sex, is that uso din noon ang anal rape. So, magkakagera, natalo yung kalaban. Rape is a form of abuse and torture towards the enemies who have been conquered. Uso yan. There's a lot of literature about it. Not because the winning group are gay, but because it's a form of abuse and torture for the conquered enemies. Tignan nyo itong isang video na ito. So bago tayo tumuloy, panoorin nyo itong isang video na ito.
Never lay hands upon me again! Don't whisper lies against me!
You cannot take my life and see my body from encampment absent notice. I am Julius fucking Caesar!
Hold him against the table! You're of same cloth as Metellus and must be taught severest lesson in who towers above you. Speak of what you know to anyone. And I just been tale of the mighty Caesar and taken my woman.
Okay, so that video is also from a series. I think it's Spartacus. Although that particular scene na nakita nyo is a fictional narrative between Tiberius and Julius Caesar, pero nakita nyo doon, there was anal rape towards Julius Caesar to make Julius Caesar, hindi ko alam kung narinig nyo yung bandang last scenes ha, to teach Julius Caesar how to be a woman, how to be inferior. So anal rape is used to attack and shame male enemies, male kung sino man yung kaaway noon. The other thing about sexuality in ancient times is what we know as, palaging kinokote ng mga conservative Christians, ang biblical marriage. Ito po ang biblical marriage noon. Marriage has nothing to do with love during the times of the Bible. It was about economy, primarily, especially in the 99.9% of the population that were poor. So women back then were valuable only because they can, of two things, they can give sexual pleasure, but their primary value is in giving birth. So, and if you have a wife that can bear many children, especially many boys, that means maraming magtatrabaho para sa pamilya nyo. So, it's about economy. Pag ikinakasal din ang isang batang babae, may tinatawag tayong dowry, bayad sa kasal. So, sino ba ang kayang magbayad ng pinakamahal na dowry dun sa tatay ng batang babae? Or minsan, dahil pareho naman silang mahirap, it's more of, well, at least mababawasan ng isang palamunin sa bahay. Ganon ang tingin sa mga babae noon. That you are a prop, either you are a valuable property to be sold for your capacity to give birth, or that you are a burden, because you are another mouth to feed in your family. So economic ang marriages noon. The other thing, aside from economy, is politics. Marriages back then were political for the upper elite. Kaya nga merong 800 wives and 700 wives and about 300 concubines si Solomon. Bakit? Because he wanted to maintain political allegiances. Hindi po dahil malibog lang si Solomon. Hindi po yun ang dahil. Well, pwede din naman. Pero it's more about the political allegiances and economic ties of Solomon to the other kingdoms around around Israel. Kaya nga, noon, meron kang legal wife for the upper elite, meron kang legal queen or legal lady of the house. Most of the time, it's very rare na ito din yung babaeng mahal mo. Very rare. But it does happen, pwede rin naman. But the common thing that happens is that it is a fixed marriage. Most likely, hindi mo mahal ang babaeng ito. Pero siya ang magiging nanay ng iyong mga anak dahil siya ay galing sa isang magandang pamilya. At yung gusto mong mahalin, kaya ka merong concubine. That's why you have concubines. Either one concubine or several concubines. Nahanap mo yung iyong emotional and sexual pleasure sa iyong concubines. But not necessarily with your legal wife. So, ayan eh, makita mo sa Game of Thrones, di ba? Bakit si Renly Baratheon willing siyang mapakasal sa babae na magiging queen niya, pero meron din siyang male lover. Yun yung talagang love niya. At dun talaga siya may sexual pleasure. Another one is temple prostitution. It was common in ancient times that certain religions, certain temples had what you called temple prostitutes. Both male and female temple prostitutes. And they get paid to have sex with worshippers, and the worshippers have sex with them, pay the temple price, to give a devotion to the god or goddess, a pagan god or pagan goddess, to get some favor, to get some blessing, particularly in terms of fertility. So, uso yan noon. And these temples, prostitutes are usually, some of them are actually slaves. Slaves in the temple. So, when in the book of Deuteronomy, it says that there shall be none in Israel a kedesha and a kedesh and kedesha. So, sabi doon, dapat walang kadesh at kedesha sa lahi ng mga Israel. The word kedesh and kedesha refers to a sacred male prostitute and a sacred female prostitute. Na wrongly translated as sodomite or what have you. Malik translation yun, pag yun yung nakita yung translation. But the right translation is male prostitute, female temple prostitute. So uso din yan noon. And it's some scholars would say that it is an oppressive religious system. So yan, ang sexual context ng Bible, how ancient peoples, particularly the writers of the Bible, understood sexuality and sex during that time. Balikan ko lang yung marriage, sabi nila biblical marriage. Biblical marriage was also, pag nagregla na yung batang babae, as soon as magregla yung batang babae, whether the young girl is 10 years old, 11 years old, 12 years old, considered woman na yan, pwede mo na yan ipakasal sa lalaki. At usually nga noon, the young girl will be married to a 30-year-old, 40-year-old man. So kung gusto nyo ng biblical marriage, I challenge the conservatives today, you want biblical marriage? Ipakasal niyo ang inyong mga 12-year-old daughters sa mga 40-year-old men who can pay the highest price. Yan ang biblical marriage. Ano na natin ang historical context? And the historical context is what we call as historical material method. Ibig sabihin, it's a method of reading scripture with the consideration of its historical, cultural, linguistic, etc., etc., kung ano na pa, the entirety of the context of the Bible. You are interpreting it with historical context. The second basic method, that's the first basic method, the second basic method of reading the Bible is what we call literary and textual criticism. Mabilis lang to, madali lang to. Mabanggit ko kanina na ang Bible, ang loob ng Bible, well, this is a Greek New Testament. Ang loob ng Bible ay may iba't ibang klase ng kwento, different types, literary types. So, nung high school tayo, nung elementary tayo, natutunan natin ang different literary types. Ano yung mga natutunan natin doon? You have myth and mythology. You have epic. You have poetry. No? So sa Bible, meron din doon. May epic stories. Merong mythological myth stories. Merong songs. Poetic songs like Psalms or Songs of Songs, Songs of Solomon. You have wisdom, proverbs. You have parables, stories. You have genealogies. You have the letters of Paul. There are only 7 authentic letters of Paul and then the other letters. And then you have laws and regulations. So, simply lang naman tong literary. It only means that dapat alam mo kung anong literary type yung gusto mong basahin at gusto mong i-interpret. For example, pumunta ka sa parables. Parables are not rules. They are not law. So you cannot treat a parable as though it is a law. If you go to If you go to the letters of Paul were a response to a particular person or particular group. So they were letters. And you cannot treat the letters as though they are stories. Letters nga eh. The wisdom literature, the wisdom proverbs cannot be, they are not laws, they are not regular, they are guides. They are guidelines, they are ethical principles. So you cannot treat them as a rule book like many conservatives are doing today. So, yun, you have to be critical on what type of literature are the different parts of the Bible. Now, punta tayo sa text. What do we mean by textual criticism? Simple lang. So in modern times, kasi noon, wala namang verse and chapter ang Bible. So, modern times siya nilagyan ng verse and chapter. Well, not necessarily modern times. Later on. Basta later on, siya nilagyan ng verse and chapter. So, when you read the Bible and you interpret the Bible, hindi pwedeng kukuha ka lang ng isang verse or dalawa o tatlong verse and then i-interpret mo na siya as is. No, you cannot do that. Well, many are doing that, but that's inappropriate. That's a misinterpretation. So when you want to interpret or read a particular verse or group of verses, you need to read the entire chapter where the verse is contained. Kasi doon mo mauunawaan ano ba yung talagang ibig sabihin nung isa, dalawa o tatlong verse na yon. And then you also have to read and understand the previous chapter and the chapter after that particular chapter. Kasi doon mo malalaman, again, ang kahulugan kung bakit naisulat ang ganiring verse. And then you also have to read the entire book. The entire book. For example, you want to understand why Mark, for example, uses the verses or speaks about the kingdom of God, or why in Mark it says why Jesus said to the young rich man, sell all you have, give the proceeds to the poor, come and follow me. If you want to understand that particular verse, you have to read the chapter. You have to read the chapters before and after it. And then you have to read the entire book to understand what was the intention, what was the true meaning of the book and of the different parts of the book. So yun yung textual analysis. No, hindi pwede. So, ina-analyze mo siya, iniintindi mo siya sa kabuuan. Kabuuan nung chapter, nung mga chapters na katabi niya, at nung entirety ng libro gusto mong pagkunan ng verse. So, ganun ang text. Ang marami kasing mga born again Christians today, kukuha ng verse kay Letter to the Romans. Kukuha ng verse kay Psalms. Kukuha ng verse kay Isaiah. Ipagbo-Boltes 5. Walang konsiderasyon sa context ng bawat isa. Walang pagbasa ng pag-aanalisa ng buong chapter or ng buong libro. Basta na lang Binoltes 5 to try to justify a particular belief that they have or a particular interpretation that they have. Hindi siya pwedeng ganun kabara-bara magbasa o mag-interpret o gumamit ng Biblia. Although, of course, there are certain times where different verses from different books can interpret each other. For example, ito madi-discuss to later on. Ngayon, ito palang susunod na topic natin about Sodom and Gomorrah. When the book of Ezekiel actually tells us what was the sin of Sodom and Gomorrah. So, a different book from a different time has something to say about the book of Genesis, particularly the story of Sodom and Gomorrah. So, minsan pwede yan. Pero how it is practiced today by most Christians, particularly evangelical Protestant Christians, barabarang magkuha ng sitas ng Biblia at ibo-Boltes 5, hindi po siya ganun. So ano ba ang punto ng lahat ng ito? Bakit ba parang hinihimay-himay mo masyado, pastor, yung Bible? Why are you para bang dinideconstruct mo yung Bible? Para bang sinasabi mong wala nang pang divine authority or divine divaness of the Bible? Parang wala na. Well, far from it, we still consider the Bible as sacred, and sacred has sacred authority. So Marcus Borg, I've talked about Marcus Borg kanina. I will talk about the authority of the Bible, the sacred status of the Bible, mainly from Marcus Borg at sa libro niyang, you can check his book, How to Read the Bible Again for the First, How to Read the Bible Again for the First Time. It's a very nice perspective on a modern approach on the Bible and Christian theology. So, and this is known by many scholars that the Bible and its different books are products, are human products of their time. Ang Biblia at ang iba't ibang libro nito ay produkto ng tao ayon sa kanilang panahon. They are stories of the ancient people of Israel, stories that are valuable to the ancient people of Israel. And these are stories of how they experience God in the different times and different events of their life as a people. The early Christians told and retold their experience of the Jesus story, how they experienced Jesus Christ, the actual historical Jesus, and how Jesus continued to be experienced in their life when Jesus was no longer here, was no longer with them. And they told about these stories, their perspectives about the Jesus stories, how and paano nila tinitignan, paano nila nauunawaan si Jesus sa kanilang buhay, sa kanilang panahon, early Christianity. And then 40 years after the historical Jesus, someone started to write the Jesus story within the context of their community. At some later point, someone wrote one gospel and another one wrote another gospel. This gospel took the Jesus story and wrote it in such a way that it is intended for Jewish Christians. Another one wrote the Jesus story whose primary intention is for the Gentile Christians. And then almost 70 to 80 years after the historical Jesus, someone wrote the Jesus story and the teachings of Jesus within the context of their persecution, during the time of their persecution. And so this, the different parts of the Bible, the different books of the Bible are human products of their time, of their circumstance, and of their place. This is how they experience God. So the Bible and the different books of the Bible are words about God. Importante yun, ha? The Bible are words about God in the language of men. And according to Marcus Borg, New Testament scholar and other scholars like him, the Bible's authority is based on its sacred status. It is not based on its origin, on its human origin. The sacred status of the Bible is because it continues to be a sacrament. The Bible is in itself a sacrament for us Christians, according to Marcus Borg. What is a sacrament? A sacrament is a visible sign that gives a spiritual, that makes us experience a spiritual reality. The Bible is a sacred, the Bible is a sacrament because it continues to be a channel of God's healing grace. At the other thing, sabi ng New Testament professor ko si Revelation Belunta, New Testament and Christian and Cultural Studies, sabi niya, why the Bible has sacred worth, why the Bible has such authority, is also because of the countless lives, iba't ibang buhay, iba't ibang tao that made it possible for this thing to come to us today. How many were the archaeologists? How many were the translators? How many were the biblical scholars? How many were the linguists and the anthropologists? Altogether, for the last 200, 300 years, in different places and different times came together so that we can have several translations and versions of the Bible today. And you can go back pa, how many countless other lives during the Protestant Reformation, during the Industrial Age, during the Printing Age, how many people were involved so that this thing, the Bible, can come to us today in the way that it is. So it is sacred also because of that. And lastly, the Bible is sacred. Makikita nyo ang sacredness ng Bible because of its transcendent or yung kanyang eternal thematics. What do I mean? So despite the terrible things that are in the Bible, yes, there are bad things in the Bible. We have what we call terror verses or terror stories in the Bible. Stories of genocide, stories of rape, stories of babies being dashed upon the rock, no? Ihampas mo yung sanggol sa may bato. Or of pregnant women being yung bata sa sinapupunan nila ay hatakin mo, no? And all of it are ordered and done in the name of God. These are terror stories of the Bible that sa totoo lang hindi niyo naririnig yan na kinikwento sa simbahan, hindi niyo naririnig yan na iniinterpret o pinipreach ni pastor o ni father. Pero andiyan yan sa Bible. And I personally believe, and many others believe, that those parts of the Bible are not of God. Even if they are written in the name of God, they are not of God. But despite of those things, the Bible continues to have a sacred status because of its eternal thematics. What do I mean? Whenever the Bible talks about justice and redemption, whenever the Bible talks about compassion and love, tells us about stories of compassion and community life, I believe those are the parts that God speaks in the Bible. Whenever the Bible talks about kindness, hope, perseverance, sacrifice, love, those are the parts, those are the things that are of God through the words of men. Whenever the Bible talks about inclusivity, you know, in Galatians, when the Apostle Paul writes about there is neither male or female, Gentile or Jew, rich or poor, master or slave, all of us are one in Christ, I believe that is of God. That is of God in the words of the human Paul. But whenever the Bible talks about, I command you, kill every man, woman, and child in this particular race of people, even if it was written in the name of God, I don't think it is of God. So this is the Bible. It continues to be a valuable thing for us Christians. But we have to really know its context. We have to know what the Bible really is. Ano ba talaga siya? Otherwise, if we take the Bible too literally, the Bible becomes a dead object. Becomes just a single meaning. Jesus becomes a dead person in the past, contained and known only through several pages of a book, or a book of books. But if you take the Bible much more seriously for what it truly is, ano ba talaga ang Biblia for what it truly is, the Bible becomes alive. The Bible becomes a conversational partner. Sabi nga nung namatay, kailan lang nung namatay na progressive Christian, the Bible should be a conversation starter, not a conversation ender, according to Rachel Held Evans. And so, I leave you again. I end this topic of Bible in context with what I said earlier, I quoted earlier from the Jesus scholar, John Dominic Crossan. He was a former Roman Catholic monk, turned archaeologist, and then turned biblical scholar and a Jesus scholar. So, ano yung sabi niya kanina? If you do bad history, you will certainly do bad theology. So this is Pastor Joseph San Jose of Open Table Metropolitan Community Church. Happy Pride!